All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio. And for our first interview for the program this week, we're very happy to have Rhys, who is actually going to be, who's our special correspondent in Canberra from Green, for Green Left. And what about, and we want to have a bit of a discussion with him about the recent kind of freedom convoy that has sort of made its mark in Canberra. In fact, it's been inspired by the Freedom Convoy, which is a far right kind of movement in Canada, which we're hoping to kind of have an interview on our program about at a future program. So yeah, good morning, Rhys.
Yeah, good morning, Jacob. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I guess the first kind of question I want to kind of ask, Rhys, is what can you tell us about this so-called Freedom Convoy in Convoy? And I guess based on your some of the observations that you've made, because from my understanding, you've observed the protests quite closely. What can you tell us about some of those observations? And I guess what does this politically represent?
Yeah. So last weekend they came and occupied a big chunk of the centre of Canberra around the lake and the Parliamentary Triangle, and they were protesting up at Parliament. But it wasn't like a regular protest. They were spread out all over the city centre. You couldn't really miss them. They were, blocking traffic and doing that sort of thing for a bit of a jolly from time to time throughout the day. So went to check it out and sort of had a look around for a while. It looks like there are about 10,000 protesters, and that seems to be the number everyone else is putting out, but that was what I estimated on the day as well. They were all obviously very much a convoy from out of state. There were just cars parked everywhere, all over any bit of green space, any bit of public parkland or whatever where they could fit. It didn't feel like a tightly disciplined protest movement like I've been sort of used to seeing. Instead, it looked more like it had this sort of silly carnival or festival atmosphere. So there were people just randomly walking around the city centre blocking traffic in small groups. There were people up at Parliament House, and I understand they had a bit of a stage up there and were doing more of a conventional rally. There was a big group of them walking across the bridge over from Parliament House down into Civic, like the Canberra CBD. And they were just, they weren't being sort of led. There wasn't like a strong force of protest marshals or anything I can see. Instead, it was more like everyone came with their particular issue to this thing. So, slogans and signs and everything of every sort with, in people operating in sort of small little groups and kind of just bound together by all being there. From afar, like without being able to do an in-depth study of it, it looks like that it sort of gripped up anyone with an anti-system or a counterculture protest message, related to the vaccines as like the big, information point being mandatory masks and mandatory vaccines. Then they've sort of gone, anyone else with anything else to chuck in, come along too and add your slogans and whatever to our pile, and we'll just have a protest for the sake of it.
Yep. All right, Rhys, it's Felix here also in the studio. How are you going?
Yeah, hey, Felix, I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for your description of the Freedom Convoy. So obviously we've also been hearing about news reports from Canada, and we're going to get someone, as Jacob talked about on the program, to talk about that. But how much do you think the Canadian Freedom Convoy has influenced the Canberra one, and what are the other origins and influences that have led to it?
Yeah, so there's definitely a bit of a copycatism. I expect something like this probably would have arisen here when you've got people like George Christensen and Craig Kelly and so on, trying to build up a movement ahead of the election. But, we saw Canadian flags. We definitely saw a few deliberate references to, look, we're doing the same thing as them, as well as some Trump flags and that sort of thing as well. I think it's definitely cross-pollinated through the same sort of online, forums where they're seeing the same kind of rhetoric that's coming out of North America. You're seeing the same kind of ideas, the same kind of arguments and slogans. the groups that actually compose, you know, or the big ideas that actually compose the movement and the origins of it, sort of most recently, it's obviously the anti-vaccine crowd. It's got this sort of significant and notable fringe of people doing everything from, you know, I'm opposed to vax mandates, through to the virus doesn't exist, or the virus is some kind of conspiracy or plot to put, you know, microchips in your blood. Like, we genuinely saw lots of that material scrawled on cars being handed out. The sort of sovereign citizen movement, if people know about that, which is kind of a sort of a libertarian right-wing movement to say, you know, the state has no legitimacy, but it's based on a very certain set of, like, cultural or subcultural in-group jargon. They were clearly there and clearly trying to spread their message to a lot of people who just come along for a more, you know, for more mainstream reasons, being against the vaccine mandates. In short, it seems to be a culmination of all of these little fringe, mostly far-right groups. We've heard plenty of reports that there are people from more of the further right, you know, hardcore nationalist groups there as well. But it was very much more a hodgepodge. And I think it's the big danger is that it's providing people with an opportunity to, like, mix around in that soup.
All right. Well, there was a particular question I was going to kind of ask, but I think you've kind of covered, kind of the question in terms of, like, a lot of your kind of response to the question. I was going to potentially just ask you a bit of a question about the iconography and the demographics that were observed at the protesting, but you've kind of covered that quite well, although if you have a bit more comments on the demographics, that would be good, but I think it could be connected to this next question.
I could definitely go into that.
Yeah,
because
go on, Reese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What was strange about it is that so I remember the anti-reclaim, also the Reclaim Australia protests, and, you know, the anti-reclaim counter-protests in about 2015, and that had much more of a, you know, a clear hard-right bent. What we saw here was a much more, you know, you had primarily Anglo-European Australians there, primarily older, middle-aged, not the kind of people you see involved in, you know, this kind of large-scale protest, but definitely swinging a bit older. And you had people coming there in, you know, identifiably family groups with, like, kids and even dogs there, which was a bit weird. In general, you saw a lot of, you know, a lot of Australian flags, a lot of Australian flags flown upside down, symbolising distress. Like, that's a bit of a an in-group you know, symbolism that they appreciate. A lot of the old Australian red ensign, which is, like, popular in the sort of nationalist and patriot and, sovereign citizen movements. We also saw some, like, Croatian and, Serbian and Macedonian flags out there. In general, I think the attitude was, like, you know, bring whatever flag is special to you so you've got something to wave.
Not people connected to the, far right, the nationalist elements of the sort of Serbian.
There was nothing else strongly to indicate that, but you do have to assume that when a bunch of people are explicitly bringing their own nationalist flags to something like this, it has been, you know, it is a deliberate move to signal that kind of nationalist politics. You also saw a lot of signs saying "hands off our kids," which is, like, on the face of it, it seems to be a fairly reasonable thing to demand, you know, not I don't want my kids mandatorily vaccinated, if that's sort of the thing that's brought you to the protest. But that kind of "save our children, hands off our children" messaging has a much longer history in the QAnon sort of conspiracy.
Pizzagate, where
they like to accuse sort of anyone that opposes them of being a pedophile, because it's a very powerful insult, it's a very powerful slur that you can throw around. And so it definitely has a bit of that in its DNA as well. And it provides a good plausible deniability where you can, you know, first you make the maximum attack of calling someone a pedophile. When pressed on it, you fall back to, oh, I just want my kids to be safe.
Yeah, thanks for that. It sounds like quite an interesting array of sort of, not just right wing, but right of center and conspiracy laden insignia and iconography there.
There's also a fairly large component of people that you would associate with that sort of hippie alternate lifestyle.
The wellness set that seems to be intersecting with the,
exactly. Yeah,
types and things.
Which is not something you traditionally have associated with, you know, the other side of the really far right stuff. But it appears that there's been a lot of cross pollination and a lot of blending of those attitudes and approaches. Yeah,
definitely realignment a little bit in those sorts of attitudes. And that does lead into the next question, which is, how do you see on your analysis that on how the far right represents this in the Australian context, but also like around the world, we're seeing a resurgence of this kind of movement, sort of really tapping into sort of a section of working class people, but also with a lot of conspiracy theories and elements of the far right, but not working entirely together with far right nationalist type movements that we've seen in the past. What do you think this? Where could this lead in your mind?
It could be very dangerous. I think a lot of the animating impulse, the reason behind this is the reason behind a lot of classic upsurges of the right, the far right like this, which is that people are looking around. You know, we've had the whole coronavirus crisis. We've had the financial crisis associated with that. In many cases, especially internationally, people are still reeling from the GFC over a decade ago. I think this is a new layer of people sort of looking around and going, well, things aren't as nice as they used to be. And I've been promised by our political class that things, you know, have to keep being nice forever, and capitalism is the best system. I think this is a lot of people looking around for an alternative to that. And, you know, instead of being exposed to serious scholarship or in-depth analysis, what they've done is they've seen the first thing someone's offered them on Facebook, grabbed it and run with it, you know, like a drowning man clutching at a straw. So it's like, it's you know, there's a lot of potential there for people to realize and to have that formed into a more productive anti-capitalist politics. On the other hand, I think a lot of people have been sort of sucked into this movement, and, you know, we can see it kind of growing. People are looking for answers, and there are plenty of prophets and crooked politicians out there happy to stand up and be the one to say, yep, I've got all the answers. It's, you know, it's vaccines, it's Bill Gates, it's the lizard men, it's whatever. And that's where I see the big danger in this kind of movement. And the fact that we've seen it globally indicates that this is a phenomenon that appeals to a lot of people. It's not just localized to any particular country. It's actually got this international kind of bent because people are seeing the same thing all over the world in response to a global crisis of capitalism.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that, Reese. I think we'll conclude this interview now, but I guess I'll make one comment and then just give you an opportunity to kind of make a final kind of comment conclusion as, probably taking on one of the kind of points you kind of said there, that's where it's kind of, it's quite bizarre and quite amusing to see, you know, you see the likes of the United Australia Party and Clive Palmer, you know, wanting to pander and cater to this new political movement, which is, you know, sees itself as anti-establishment. But then, of course, there's a certain irony when you have someone like Clive Palmer, Craig Kelly, or signing up because, you know, more or less, these people are actually part of the establishment. And in fact, Clive Palmer's probably motivations for supporting this movement isn't probably because he thinks that he's necessarily against vaccine mandates or he's against vaccines. He just wants to push his politics because he knows that this politics is going to be more favourable for him getting more mining projects approved by any sort of any future liberal capitalist government.
Yeah, I think you're right. His aim is more to, you know, degrade the information environment so nobody trusts anything they read, and in the chaos he can get his dirty deals through. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately that's the best kind of antidote to this stuff, is that, you know, I don't think this kind of politics has the ability to achieve much because they don't have, outside of the very narrow demand of ending vaccine mandates, which will, you know, it'll happen eventually, I suspect. Outside of that, they don't have any great vision, right? And so I think this is where the opportunity comes in for those of us who do have a political vision, those of us who do have a serious and deep analysis of what's going on, why it's bad, and how to change it. And I think that's where we're going to have to start with the, you know, the boring low-level politics in organizations like unions and community movements in trying to build a genuine and viable alternative to the status quo rather than, you know, a bunch of memes on a Facebook group.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Reece. Yeah, this has been a very insightful interview and discussion. Thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Reece.
See you, Jacob. See you, Felix.
All right. We're just speaking to Reece, our correspondent from Canberra.